and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this segment of the Hagman Report. This episode, you know, it's not going to happen the way you think. That's the title of tonight's show, and that's what we're going to be talking about. It's not going to happen the way everyone thinks. I don't believe it will. I believe that there are some wild cards out there that we're going to get into this evening, this segment, this show, to explain. Well, it's just not going to happen the way you think. I'm Doug Hagman with Joe Hagman. Together we are something I like to call the Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania, broadcast live on the Global Star Radio Network. And of course, you can go to HagmanandHagman.com, choose your venue at HagmanandHagman.com. Of course, we have that. We also have HagmanReport.com for show prep. We have a lot of things to get into tonight, including some anniversaries that, you know, anniversaries that flew by. And did anyone notice? Are they relevant to the happenings of today? Absolutely they are. Absolutely. And we're going to be getting into that, the first segment of this show. But before we do, I want to mention that portion of tonight's broadcast brought to you by A, American Survival Wholesale. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. B, Health Masters, HealthMasters.com. Support them. They've got some fantastic nutritional supplements. And C, of course, Minuteman Stove, the rocket stove of the future. Let me tell you, any prepper that doesn't have a Minuteman Stove, you're missing out. Go to MinutemanStove.com and check that out. American Survival Wholesale for all your long-term storable food needs, as well as HealthMasters.com for your nutritional needs. Joe, it's good to have you. Eric the Tech is here as well. And Lady the Studio Dog brought in just to round things up. Joe, it was a busy weekend. Say that, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a lot going on here inside the studio and outside in the world, and we're back here for this Monday edition. We got a lot to get into today. We're going to be in the bottom of this hour. We're going to be joined by Lane Miller from MinutemanStove.com. He's going to come on to talk about survival preparation cooking.
Yeah, this is something, and folks, you have to understand, this is something I asked for because I don't know, okay? I don't know how to... I can start a fire in my fireplace. I can start a fire given the right circumstances, but I don't know when the situation is such as I need to use the Minuteman stove. I could use it, I'm sure, but we want to talk about this. We want to talk about getting you ready if you need to use the Minuteman stove, the rocket stove. What's the best way to do this? And also, whatever the pitfalls and such. This is not an infomercial. This is a preparatory class, if you will. And that's important. But before we get into that, well, I want to get into a look back. You know, past is prologue, is it not? Let's take a look back, because this past weekend was an anniversary. I wonder how many people remember what happened this weekend, just 5 years ago. It was August 6th, 2011. A U.S. Boeing CH-47 Chinook military helicopter was reportedly shot down while transporting a quick reaction force attempting to reinforce an engaged unit of Army Rangers in Wardak Province, west of Kabul, Afghanistan. The resulting crash, the murder, I will say, killed all 38 people on board an American this aircraft. 25 American Special Operations personnel, SEAL Team 6, you may recall. 5 U.S. Army National Guard men and women, and Army Reserve crewmen, and of course 7 Afghan commandos and 1 Afghan interpreter, as well as Bart the dog. U.S. military working dog. 5 years ago, and I 5 years ago this past Saturday, and I watched the news for information on that. You know, you might ask, why are you looking at something that happened 5 years ago, and what's its relevance to today in this segment that passes prologue? Looking back, it has a lot of relevance. I would direct you to our show from July 16th of last year, where we extensively interviewed Mr. and Mrs. Charles Strange, the parents of Michael Strange, who was aboard that helicopter. We also interviewed him two other times in the past. It was actually September 12th of 2013 when we interviewed him the first time. And he came on a month prior, or 2 weeks prior, just to give a little bit of introduction. But so we interviewed him three different times. The most recent was July 16th of 2015. And Michael Savage interviewed him, and he's been on numerous other programs. But let me remind everyone here, folks, that we are at war. And the war that we're fighting is not just against those people who are trying to kill us, but those people who are trying to tell us that, no, you know, you guys aren't targets. We're fighting an information war. We're fighting a spiritual war. We're fighting a war on multiple levels. This is one of the most important events, in my view, that took place in the last 5 years, and that is the downing of Extortion 17, which is the call sign for the helicopter that was taken out on August 6th of 2011, just months after the alleged raid and killing of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. Members of SEAL Team 6 were on that helicopter and were at that raid. Never before in history was a 1960s era Chinook helicopter packed with so many of American elite fighters. Never before in history was this helicopter filled with these commandos sent out without the necessary cover. And never before in history of America were the men and women and dog brought back to America after a ramp ceremony where a Muslim cleric presided over the bodies of not just the Afghans but the Americans and damned them to hell. This under the watchful eye of not just Barack Hussein Obama, but of Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch, the Muslim Brotherhood sympathizer, the pathetic, pathological liar, Clinton. I hope I was able to slip enough adjectives in there for your satisfaction. Relatives, including Charles Strange and Mrs. Strange, of the 30 U.S. troops killed when their helicopter was shot down, said the congressional testimony from U.S. military officials answered some but very, very, very few, precious few questions about what happened, about the single deadliest incident in American history involving special forces, that of Extortion 17. You may recall that Gary Reed, the principal deputy assistant secretary of defense for special operations, told the House committee back a year or two ago that the Chinook CH-47 flight, a lumbering transport helicopter, was the proper aircraft for the high-risk mission. Oh, it was okay. It was normal. You see, they were targeting a senior Taliban commander in the early morning hours of August 6th in eastern Afghanistan. Now, this military spokesman, just to give you some background on this, and then we'll move on, worked to dispel allegations that insurgents might have been tipped off about the flight by members of the Afghan security forces. He said that 8 Afghans aboard the Chinook who also died had been properly vetted. But what he didn't tell you was they were swapped out at the last minute. the parents of many of the parents, I should say, of the killed are dissatisfied with the answers. They're dissatisfied with everything that has come out of the U.S. military, the White House, and the Department of State. Charles Strange told me and told Joe directly on this radio station, on this network, that Obama, that he blames Obama directly and Hillary as well for this incident, for the loss of life, for the death of his son, Michael Strange. I thought about Michael Strange and Charles Strange this weekend, and I can't imagine the anguish that family was going through, or the families of the killed were going through. I did say a prayer, many prayers actually, for Charles Strange, for his strength and for his wife. And I was going to play a clip. I was going to bring a clip on this tonight. And we still might do that this week. Excuse me. It's starting to sound like Hillary Clinton now, right? I was going to bring a clip on Charles Strange, with Charles Strange, and I decided not to. Although, given the fact that I've got a frog in my throat now, maybe I made a mistake there. Again, just trying to emulate Hillary Clinton here in this monologue. Wait, I got to throw in a couple of coughs here if I'm going to do that Clinton thing. There we go. See? Did that sound more like Hillary? The lizard? The reason I'm bringing Extortion 17 up and Charles Strange and Michael Strange up, Charles Strange started a foundation, the Michael Strange Foundation, which I would urge everyone to support and to talk to people about. But I really want to bring your attention back to August 6th of 2011, in the days there, in those trying days. The military had notified Charles Strange and other families that the bodies of the Special Ops Team, SEAL Team 6, had to be cremated because of the condition of the bodies. That's not true. As a matter of fact, Charles Strange on this program said that the military had given them a disc. On that disc, a hard disc, and on that disc were photographs of his son dead, holding a rifle, to the extent where he could see the hair on the arms of his son clutching a rifle. His son had jumped from the helicopter before it crashed and was fighting when he died. His body was not mangled. Wait a minute, Hillary Clinton moment again. I want a short circuit. Oh, wait. Wrong topic. The reason this is important is because we as Christians have a choice to make when it comes to the elections of this year. Now, with respect to viable candidates, I understand you've got numerous parties and other things going on. You've got libertarian candidates and even Communist Party candidates. But when you're talking about viable candidates playing on the field in which we're playing, you've got two choices. You've got Diane Rodham, the witch, pathological liar, Clinton, or you've got Donald Trump. That's it. That's it. And I believe that if you as a Christian, and you can turn this off and that's fine. I think if you are a Christian and you say, well, I'm going to vote for Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, because at least we know that the evil that we're going to get, we can manage that. Trump, I'm not so sure. If that's your position. Or even perhaps I'm going to set this one out, or I'm going to vote for Jill Stein, or I'm going to vote for, Johnson, whatever. I can't remember his name now. then I think it's my view that you should reevaluate your belief system, your ideology. And if that is offensive to you, then take it for what it's worth. I don't care. I care about you. I don't care about that ridiculous decision and that process that you arrived at to make that decision. Because you see, I spoke briefly to Greg Jackson today, and he says, you know, I don't believe that America is going to survive. And I agree with that. I don't believe America has got a future. However, under Donald Trump, perhaps we do. We could buy some time. Can we not? And if buying time is the only thing we can do that gives our children and our grandchildren the ability to swing on their swing set and to enjoy recess one more day, or your wife to trim the roses or pick the flowers or do the gardening one more day, one more normal day, is it worth it? If we could have one more normal day, is it worth it? You see, too many Christians think for themselves and not for others. But back to Extortion 17. At the epicenter of Extortion 17 is, of course, the usual suspects. But the most prominent, the most relevant, of course, would be Barack Hussein Obama II, Barry Satoro as we know him, and Clinton. Clinton lied. Obama lied. And they're still lying. We will put together a clip from Charles Strange. Not tonight, but we will. And we'll play that clip. I think what Mr. Strange had said to us, now his initial interview actually predates the Michael Savage interview that you can hear on the different YouTube channels and networks. He grabbed Obama by the shoulder, by the arms and said he wanted answers. This was before he wiped the snot on his sniveling snot, because he was crying, on his lapel, Obama's lapel, much to the consternation of the Secret Service agents. But I think as Americans, we need answers as well to what happened. Because Extortion 17, you unravel that, the key to that unravels what happened on May 1st of that year as well. And that's the alleged taking down, killing of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. Which leads me to the statement past its prologue. When you look at the events leading up to the downing of Extortion 17, plenty of indicators by the parents of the fallen soldiers that said, look, each, to a person, each one said, my son said, something's wrong, there's a leak. Someone is leaking information. I've got my will ready. Hey, Dad, I've got my will ready. Charles Strange said his son, he believes his son knew he was going to his death when he was called back. He was called back a day early. Call came from the White House. So if that's the case, you've got Hillary, the witch Clinton, and Obama working for the Muslims. And you might say, well, of course, we know that. But you also have Jason Chaffetz, Daryl Issa, Grassley. Need I go on? On the right, working for them as well. Otherwise, they would not get the answers that these parents deserve, that Charles Strange deserves. past his prologue. Obama is adamant, as is Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, adamant to protect Islam at all levels. Past being prologue, you've got reports now. The former Department of Homeland Security officer Philip Haney appeared on CBN News, and he gave an insider's perspective on the Obama regime's dedication to avoiding offending Muslims at any cost, even at the expense of national security. What happened on August 6, 2011 plays right into what's taking place today. What happened on August 6, 2011, the massive, the worst loss of American life, unprecedented loss of American life, the single worst loss of American lives in a single incident in the Afghan campaign, surpassing Operation Red Wings in 2005, is a byproduct and a direct consequence of the Obama and Clinton Panetta Brennan Muslim Brotherhood loving bootlicking bow making regime. Haney, the former DHS officer who should know, detailed his experience as a whistleblower. He wrote a book, See Something, Say Nothing. A Homeland Security officer exposes the government's submission to jihad. Folks, we have submitted to jihad through Obama and Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton. Back in 2009, just very quickly, as we go back just a little bit further and past this prologue, Haney's superior said, we want you to do something in your capacity as DHS officer. We want you to go in, and we want you to go in all the training manuals and eliminate the word modify. Anything that linked information in about 850 records that were put in the system about the Muslim Brotherhood. We want you to correct certain statements about the Muslim Brotherhood. Haney said the Obama regime didn't wish to investigate the Muslim Brotherhood. They don't want to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood terrorist members because it relied on the Muslim Brotherhood and other Muslim groups with ties to terrorism to help form U.S. counterterrorism policy. Today, ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you this. We would use the enemy playbook, correct? Yes. But would we invite the enemy into our home and show them our alarm system, our perimeter security, and give them the blueprints to our tactics? No. But yet Obama, Hillary, Brennan, Panetta, and those before them did just that. What happened next in 2012, less than a year after Extortion 17 went down, or was taken down? Obama and his Muslim Brotherhood puppets purged all 67 of Haney's records dealing with Muslims associated with a movement known as Tablighi Jamaat, which was the group that actually spawned into ISIS. They didn't just modify the information in the records, they completely expunged the records. And then they investigated Haney for putting that information into the system in the first place. This is how this administration works. You see, past is indeed prologue because it is happening again and again and again. And in fact, the accelerator under the foot of Obama and under the foot of Hillary prior to her resignation has been pressed down very hard. I didn't intend to take this entire segment, especially I didn't intend to take it away from Joe, but I thought it was important that we, Joe, I thought it was important that we recognize the fifth anniversary of the takedown of Extortion 17, that we realize and remind people that this helicopter, this mission, these men were sacrificed on the altar of the Muslim Brotherhood slash ISIS, that this happened, this could have been prevented by the powers in the White House, at Foggy Bottom as well. Foggy Bottom indeed. Maybe it's Wide Bottom at the time that she was there, but open mouth, big mouth. So I say this, you're a Christian out there, and you, if you're considering voting for Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, I guess that might be your business. But she's got blood on her hands, as does Obama and Sharia, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim infiltration in this country. At this point, I don't even know if we can walk it back. Joe?
Folks, we'll be right back with Lane Miller from Minuteman Rocket Stove. Stay with us. Staying alive in the middle of a disaster or survival situation is a tough thing to do. It's a lot easier to do when you have a Minuteman rocket stove. Folks, go to MinutemanStove.com. We have Lane Miller, the owner of Minuteman Rocket Stove, with us right now. And we're going to talk about survival preparations and cooking in disasters, in camping situations. Just some healthy tips on staying alive when you need to be able to make some food.
You know, I got to say this, as you're saying that, staying alive from the Bee Gees. How many people remember that song, Staying Alive? Remember, you got disco era. You got to be that old. But, Mr. Miller, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report. And tell us that it's not going to be that bad when things go awry. We need to use your product and help us. Help me understand.
Well, hey Joe and understand. Doug, thank you very much for having me back on the show. I tell you, you know, I don't think it's going to be very easy to get by in the future, but I think there's a lot of things that people can do to make bad times much better. So, you know, I've been to a lot of prepper shows. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay, no, you say that. See, here's what we want to do, Mr. Miller. We want to offer our listening audience, we want to offer them the ability. We want to offer them some good nuggets, survival tip nuggets right now, including the use of your product, because we want them to not just survive, but to thrive through the crises that are about to hit us. And the tonight's program, the name of the program, it's not going to happen the way you think. That's right. It's not going to happen. I don't believe, we don't believe, Joe and I, and even Eric said, yeah, I don't think things are going to come down the way everyone thinks they are. So, but in the event we need alternative ways to cook food, you're going to help us on this, right? We can call you during the disaster. Well, better yet, why don't you tell us now? But go ahead. I'll shut up now and let you talk, and you talk us through this.
Do we lose him?
Do we lose Mr. Miller? Paging Mr. Miller.
I know he had before the show we were communicating with each other, he had a new headset that he was using.
Never a good thing. I remember Duke being on Coast to Coast with a new headset and George saying,
I think we got him back.
George saying, get rid of the headset, Doug.
Yeah, we're here.
I'm done with the headset. Is this better?
That's better. I was just relating to the audience. Mr. Miller, I was on with George Norrie one time, and it was like 2 in the morning. I had a new headset, and it was 2 to 4, 2 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the morning. And in fact, I was on with Steve, and there's a voice like, you know, out of the ether came across my headset. And the only thing I could really understand was George saying, I won't use the expletive, but he said, dump the headset now.
Dump the headset now. Well, I needed to. I tell you, it was weird. I couldn't hear you guys very well when I was on there. And I could hear myself in this weird little echo in the background. So it's off now. I'm on regular hold up to my earphone now, and we'll just go forward from here.
Let's rock. Well, listen, all right.
Thank you guys for having me back on the show. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank the listening audience out there, especially the ones that have bought our stove. It's been wonderful. The response has been just fantastic from the customers, and we're shipping more and more every day. We couldn't be happier, and we've been able to bring on new employees, and things are just fantastic. And it's all a result of your guys' help and promotion, and customers trusting us to put a product in their hand that they'll be able to use, and hopefully they'll trust us even more, because you know, it's just something I really feel passionately about, getting these stoves out to the public, because so many people are just unprepared. I wanted, you know, to spend a little time tonight briefly discussing survival cooking, and although much of the information is basic and common sense, it's been my experience in talking with preppers at shows and at prepper gatherings that the topic is very often overlooked, and many people are not as prepared as they think. So, you know, I'm going to go through a few points tonight and discuss basic, you know, outline of what the topics are in survival cooking. And then I just ask the listener, you know, self-analyze as you hear this information and just kind of look at your own predicament and your own situation, where you live, what resources are available to you, what kind of cookware and things you have in your kitchen, and just kind of make a checklist of things that you may or may not have so that you'll be prepared, because I really think that as we move deeper into the fall and towards election and even past then in the transition period, I think we're really, you know, it's very scary. This is a time when I'd say, you know, we've moved to condition orange, so everybody really needs to consider getting their stuff tightened up right now. So I guess we'll start with survival cooking. Basically, it breaks down into three basic areas. You've got cooking at home, which I call sheltered in place. And in going through this, you have to think, this is a world where you're not going to have any electricity, you're not going to have, you know, any resupply on fuel, and also water is going to be an issue. So those are, you know, three things that you're going to have to really you live without a lot of it, and, you know, be able to mitigate a shortage of the other. And basically, I'm going to start, we'll just start with sheltered in place, and we'll move on from there.
Let me just tell the audience this, okay? I see many people who have ordered freeze-dried long-term storable food, and there are number 10 cans or even Mylar packages. They're, you know, they've got them stored under the bed, in the closets, wherever, all right? And they have their guns, they've got their ammo, they've got their Bible, they're spiritually prepared, they've got their water, actually freeze-dried water, just add the water, and, oh wait, no, never mind.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Okay, but they've got everything, but you know, they stand there, and they think they're ready, and, okay, so, the cooking aspect, you're not gonna do it on a stove, because, and you have to add water to the freeze-dried long-term storable foods. And people, you know, look, I'm a smart guy, I think, or relatively. It depends on who you ask. I mean, my wife, not so much. But you know, you want to be able to cook a meal or cook the food and have it taste not like sawdust. So you have to have a good product to start with. And that's where American Swappa Wholesale comes in for their long-term storable food. But then you've got to have a good thing to cook it on. And that's where you come in. So yes, I just want to make sure that people understand that I thought I was prepared until I saw what you had and sent the rocket stove, and now I feel a whole lot better. Go ahead. Take it.
Oh, yeah. Well, a rocket stove, I mean, the majority of people aren't even aware of what a rocket stove is. And, you know, basically it's a wood-burning device that burns little sticks and twigs. and they're extremely efficient stove design. It's probably the most efficient way that you can burn wood and create a cooking fire. And it's got some wonderful other attributes, too. Rocket stoves use very small diameter little stuff, even biomass, which is little bramble and stuff you pick right up off the ground. So even if you're in an urban environment, or if you're, even if you have a lot of wood resource, you know, it cuts down a huge amount of processing time and energy. So it's a real work saver. And, you know, the formula in survival is calories in and calories out. So if you can reduce your workload and still create the same, you know, effect of cooking without having to split wood and chop wood and haul wood and do all of that, then you're just that farther ahead in the game when you're talking about the calorie equation. So that's one of its main attributes, is it's a real workload saver. Now, you're also burning little sticks and twigs. Now, they're everywhere. The fuel is truly at your feet. Even in an urban environment, you'll be able to go down to the park or go, you know, around the corner. You can burn the wood chips out of your garden if you need to. That's the kind of fuel that would be available to you. And if you have to split down some wood, say you found a pallet and you wanted to tear it down, rocket stoves are so efficient and use so little wood. It's on the order of like a tenth or a 15th or even a 20th of the wood that you'd use in an open fire. You could make a pallet last virtually a whole week, if not a whole week. I could cook with just one pallet. So it's extremely efficient. And once you get a rocket stove heated up, you can feed it cardboard, you can wind up newspaper, you can use all kinds of little combustible things to keep it going. So, you know, it's a truly amazing little device. And, we feel like the Minuteman rocket stove is the perfect answer for the preppers. We designed the stove specifically for the preppers' needs.
I can second that. Look, folks, this is not just a mere ammo can. I've been to many, since I've been doing this broadcast, and Joe too, we've been to many expos. And I'll say your product is heads and shoulders above anyone else's. Only because it's reinforced, it's got the burner, it's got the various, I mean, it's got the seal around the top.
It's easy, efficient.
Yeah.
It's small.
And I'll tell you, it stands up to the elements. We left ours out in the rain. All right, fine. Here we are, sheltering in place. Let's rock. Keep going.
Okay, so we're sheltered in place. Well, basically, you know, we need to think about what kind of cookware you're going to use. And, I'm a big fan of using cast iron cookware. It's easy to clean. It doesn't show the soot from burning wood on it, so you don't look down at your stainless steel and say, oh my gosh, it's so filthy, I've ruined it. It's extremely durable. You could leave cast iron out in the rain for 10 years, clean it up, and reseason it, and it's ready to go again. So it's virtually bulletproof. And it's also cookware that you can use directly in a fire. If you ever do need to throw it in or want to cook over an open fire, you can put a Dutch oven right into the fire, a pan or whatever, lay it right into the fire. There's no handles that are made of plastic or anything like that to damage, and it won't warp. I mean, that's how it was designed. So I'm a big fan of cast iron cookware. And just to have the basics, I suggest everybody have a large skillet, like a 12 or 15 inch skillet. That's where you're going to do the bulk of your frying and that type of thing. Also, you would want a large Dutch oven. That can be used, and when I say large, I mean like an 8 quart, possibly up to a 12 quart if you had a large family. But you can use them actually to cook in like an oven. And you can do that on top of a stove, or you can do that in an open fire. And you can bake breads in them and bake pies, do anything you want as far as baking goes. But it also doubles as a very big, you know, stock pot or very big cooking pot of that type. And it's nice to also have a smaller Dutch oven in case you're not cooking huge quantities as well. You know, those are some of the basics, but you do need to have at least one stainless steel, you know, big pot. I like about a 12-quart size. And the reason is because it's not great to boil water in a Dutch oven. I'm not saying that you can't do it, but it just, for some reason, it doesn't taste well, and it also will boil the seasoning out of your metal. So you'll have to end up re-seasoning your oven more often if you boil water in it. But it's not undoable, but I really do suggest having a stainless steel pot as well for boiling water. Also, it's useful to wash dishes in and that kind of thing as well, where you don't want to use soap on cast iron. So having that big stainless steel pot's nice. And about a 12-quart's good, too. You can also can in it if you're growing vegetables, so it'll also double as a water bath for that. You know, other than that, you've got all of your regular cookware when you're at home. You can use it. I do suggest everybody have a really good deep supply of dishwashing liquid because it's an awesome soap. Dishwashing liquid is the most versatile soap that you have in your house. You can use it in a pinch to clean your clothes. You can use it to wash your dishes. You can even use it for your own hair and body soap. So of all the soaps to stockpile in depth, I say dishwashing liquid is the one to focus on. You know, other than that, basically at home, you have a lot of options as far as cooking goes. You've got your home stove, but if it's electric, it won't be working most likely. If you do have a fueled stove, one that runs on LP gas, let's say, as long as you don't have to require electric power to get it started or for it to run for some reason, you should be able to use that stove. Even if it requires an electric start, you can accomplish that with matches or a ferro rod. So you would be able to use that LP stove, but my suggestion is don't use it. Use it as conservatively as possible because that fuel is very valuable and it might be the last LP fuel you ever get your hands on. So I'd leave that in the ground as long as possible and rely on that rocket stove. Your other options are to cook an open fire. And, you know, there's a lot of problems with that. You've got to, one, have a huge resource, and it's a lot of wood processing time, like we discussed earlier, and
it's a lot of waste.
Energy. So,
yeah, a lot of waste.
And it's wasteful. And when you put up that big smoke column, I mean, you're just drawing people right in on you and advertising that you're the guy in the neighborhood that has food, and that could cause security problems for you. So it's good not to create smoke when you're cooking. You know, basically, those are the options that you have there. I've written down something else in my notes here. Rocket stove, really rely on that when you're cooking at home. If you have a wood cook stove, that's great in the winter time, but there again, it heats up your house in the summer, making it uncomfortable, and it uses a lot of wood compared to a rocket stove. So here again, I'd still have a rocket stove. The solar ovens and those types of devices are very, very nice to have. They're great for cooking certain kinds of dishes. If you're doing rice dishes or long-term, you know, dried beans, that kind of thing, a solar oven is perfect. But it does have its limitations. They're not very effective at night, of course, and during bad weather. And you can't use them to boil water very well, so they're not very good for processing water. But with all of these types of issues in prepping, layers upon layers, that's what you're looking to do. Have everything as much as possible. Have the solar oven, have the rocket stove, any other device that you can come up with, have it. And all of them have their points and their best uses, but most of them have their limitations as well. So that's kind of the sheltered-in-place thing. Now, the other aspect of survival cooking is when you're on the go. And I'm speaking more about a mobile base camp. If you're moving around by vehicle or, you know, a refugee by vehicle or you're rendezvousing with other preppers, that kind of thing, you'll be able to carry quite a bit of your home kit with you. But, of course, you can't take that kitchen stove or that big wood-burning cook stove with you most likely. So the rocket stove is extremely good to have. And that's one of the features of the Minuteman stove that we tried to incorporate into it. By using a 50 caliber ammo can as our chassis, that put a rubber sealed lid on our rocket stove. So when you go to pack it into your vehicle, the lid seals shut tight. All the soot and stuff like that that's dirty inside of the stove remains in the stove, and the outside is perfectly clean. So there's no smells or soot. It won't get your gear dirty. It's very lightweight. It's only 14 pounds, and it's half the size, if not a quarter of the size, of most of the other rocket stoves on the market, so it doesn't take up much room. And the fact that it's an ammo can means that most likely you've got other ammo cans that you'll be carrying with you, and they'll all stack together very efficiently. So that's another neat thing about our stoves. Other than that, when you're on foot, or I mean on in a mobile base camp, you basically are going to be able to use a rocket stove or use a fueled stove, but here again, you got to carry all the fuel with you that you're going to use. Or you're going to be using an open fire. And one technique I just like to make people aware of is the Dakota fire hole technique, where you dig two holes in the ground and you tunnel between the two little holes. And basically what you're doing is you're building a rocket stove in the ground. And it works in very much the same way. So if you have to do an open fire, that's a good way to do one. And it won't make a lot of light, nor does it make any very much smoke. It really cuts down the smoke too, so that's an excellent technique to know. You know, the third part of survival cooking is when you're on foot, and basically it's exactly the same as being a hiker. You know, you're going to have a little fueled stove. Usually they run off of white gas or unleaded gas. I really prefer unleaded fueled stoves because you might run across a vehicle or a supply of that somewhere along the way, so you could resupply. But, you know, rocket stoves, even mine, are usually a little bit too big and bulky to carry unless you're going to be doing kind of a kitchen sharing type situation where each individual person in the group on foot carries one or two items with them to complete, you know, a very rudimentary kit that way. Our stove is 14 pounds. You know, there are some other folding type stoves out there, but they're not necessarily rocket stoves, and they will create smoke and all. So, you know,
14 pounds. Again, I gotta, you know, Lane, I gotta say this. The 14 uh-huh. pounds, there is no wasted weight there. Okay. All the 14 pounds are put to great use. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but it's reinforced. The ammo can style is reinforced, and there's no extra weight. It's all needed, equally proportioned, and very good. So, okay, go ahead, sir.
Right. And our stove is fully insulated, too. I mean, there's lighter rocket stoves that aren't insulated, but typically they're much bigger and bulkier. They're going to be real dirty. I don't even know if they're even that much lighter. They tend to be made out of, you know, heavy gauge steel tubing, so I've never actually weighed one of them. But at 14 pounds, I don't know of another fully insulated stove like ours that comes in at that weight. Now, I know there are a few that are close, but they're a few pounds heavier than even ours. We use a ceramic refractory insulation inside. It's a premium type insulation, but it's not very heavy at all. We use less than a pound of it in the stove, so that's not adding a lot of weight. The main weight of our stove is the burn tube, and you know, if we'd have made it any lighter, we would have been taking away the durability of the stove. And I really wanted the stove to be something that if you had to use it every day, two or three times a day, that it would last you 5, 10, who knows how many years. But, you know, burning through an eighth inch of steel using sticks and twigs, you know, I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's a lot longer than I want to spend using a rocket stove out of necessity. So we think this is something that'll really get you through the problem, you know, to the other side, whatever that resolution is.
Mr. Miller, this burns at a hot temperature. Could you, I don't know if you've done this, but could you give us an example of, you know, versus a normal stove? Like, how long would it take to boil water? Because I know yours burns at a more concentrated and in a much higher temperature.
Right. Well, on our video that we have on YouTube, you can go on, just search for Minuteman Rocket Stove on YouTube and pull this up. We boil 5 pounds of potatoes in an 8-quart Dutch oven. And in that video, we used, of course, a whole 5-pound bag of potatoes. We sliced them up. but we use a measured gallon of water in the pot. And it took us 26 minutes to get that to a boil, and I didn't really have the rocket stove fully heated up when we put it on. It was still, you know, putting out just little puffs of smoke, which means that it hadn't really gotten all the way up to its operating temperature, but it took us about 26 minutes. Now, if you're just heating up a freeze-dried dinner and you're just going to do a couple of cups of water, you're looking at, you know, 5 minutes, less than that maybe. I mean, it's pretty quick. It's all the power that you need to cook for a whole family, and it's right on par with the kitchen stove. So as fast as you can do it at home, you can do it on a Minuteman rocket stove.
Interesting. Lane, you got about 2 minutes left on until the end of the segment. Is there anything that you haven't gone over or would like to tell people about your product that we haven't touched on?
Well, you know, as far as the stove is concerned, you know, it's a wonderful product. I think they'll be able to see what it's all about by going to our site, MinutemanStove.com. But I did want to mention our Ferrocerium fire strikers as well. We manufacture a line of those. They come on three different rod sizes and five different configurations, you know, for any use, be it a home half-inch thick home one that's got over 100,000 strikes, or even our portable ones, which are still 8,000 to 10,000 strikes. They're very, very good quality rods. I did a lot of research on rod manufacturers and tested them all before we decided on the one that we would go with. And we're extremely proud of them. They're the sparkiest on the market. I haven't found anybody's that are better. And that is a huge, huge thing when you are trying to get a fire started, especially when you're wet and cold and shaken. Who wants to struggle with a little fire striker that only puts out a few sparks? I mean, I use that
just to see what it would do. I have a fire pit in the back of my home. I struck it one time, just one time. And had a conflagration going, so right. I had to try it, and you're right.
Well, I call it the never-ending gobstopper of sparklers. I mean, these things throw out sparks like it's crazy, and they're very, very durable. And they're an absolute necessity, especially if you're doing the mobile base camp or if you're on foot. Anytime you're going to be exposed to the elements, you have to have a ferro rod because it is the only foolproof method that can survive being wet. Lighters, matches, I don't care what they're rated. Eventually, the water will get to them. So it's extremely important.
No, thank you. Yeah, indeed. You know, I want to thank you for coming on and talking not just about your product, but about the importance of the, well, we need something to cook on, and you give us options, you know, and we, and folks, look, plan your survival accordingly. Things are going to get rough. You know, it may not have to be as rough as it could be if you don't plan ahead. And this is exactly what we're talking about, planning ahead. Thank you, Mr. Miller. MinutemanStove.com.
Thank you so much, Doug and Joe. And thank you for your listeners.
All right, yes, God bless. Thanks, man. Nice. Preparation. It's all about preparation. Joe, if we prepare, if we look at things and say, okay, this is how we have to do things a little bit. If we say, all right, what am I missing? That little thing, and I know that my biggest problems have been caused by, I shouldn't say the biggest problems, but many of the big problems have been caused by my failure to plan. Because when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's what the saying is. When you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So look at your preps, understand, look at the totality of your preps, understand what you need and how things can help you, whether it's a stove or whatever. Hang right with us. Going to be right back.